Well, we get up every morning expecting every day to be similar to the day before. We go through our morning routines, whatever that may look like for you. We all have our different morning routines. But we all have a reasonable expectation of what our day is going to be like. We go to work, we go to school, we may go shopping, we may run errands, go to the post office, or whatever your plans are for that day. On the Sabbath, we have a different routine, but it's still a routine. It's our Sabbath routine. It probably begins Friday evening, and you have certain things. As you know, the work week is ended, and you're ushering in the Sabbath. And then, of course, from Sabbath to Sabbath, we have our Sabbath routine. And even that is slightly different for everybody, but you may have a certain tradition or routine that you've normally done each and every Sabbath. But then something happens, and our routine, whatever that may be, is disrupted in some manner or another. You may be on your way to work and you get a flat tire, or maybe you get a ticket. I've had both in my life. I won't tell you which I've had more of, but I've had both. Or maybe you're on your way to school and you miss the bus. I've made that mistake one time too. Rushing out of the home late, I ran down to the bus stop and nobody was there. So I thought, oh, maybe school was canceled. Nope, I just missed the bus. I think I was off by an hour. Maybe it was time change. I don't know. Or maybe you're on your way to the post office or shopping or whatever those errands may be and you get into a car accident. Or maybe you get one of those phone calls. You know, the phone calls that come in the middle of the night, and it has bad news. But whatever it is, your life is now disrupted. Your routines have been disrupted. As I mentioned in a sermon I gave not too long ago, my wife and I have been through several crises in our lives, certainly during our marriage. We went through the Y2K situation together and planning for the unknown and trying to be balanced in that. I remember being at work when the 9/11 attacks happened and my wife was at home. And of course, when I got home later that day, we're all staring at the television, probably like many of you. And of course, we got through the Northeast blackout, the nor'easter, that Halloween nor'easter storm. I've mentioned that in that sermon as well. And now, of course, we're going through this pandemic. And so this will be one of those things my wife and I will add to our list of things that we've gone through as a married couple in our lives. Other events that also occurred in my lifetime that were worse than this COVID-19, but I never even thought of them because they didn't really get the attention that this has got. It didn't cause a panic that I was aware of. The Hong Kong flu, for example, in 1968 and 1969, 4 million people died from that Hong Kong flu. And yet I didn't remember now. Again, I was 7 years old, so probably wasn't paying attention to the news. But I don't remember it being a matter that I even remember being talked about until right now as we're comparing this with that, those kind of things. The funny part about it was during that big epidemic, Woodstock also was going on in 1969, but we didn't have a widespread outbreak and deaths as a result of that. But I've lived through this, swine flu in 2009, avian bird flu, AIDS, HIV. And so I guess, the reality of it is these things come and they go. And we learn through each and every one of these experiences. Some are more stressful on us than others. But what we've all been going through as a result of the decisions that have been made by our government because of this pandemic has been a disruption in our lives on a massive scale. I think that's about the easiest way to put it, probably the simplest phrase we can think of. It's just been a major disruption in our lives and in our routines. It doesn't make you feel, at least me, for example, I don't feel any better when, there's a sign in our town every time I drive through town. We're all in this together. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, it doesn't make me feel any better when I hear that. My favorite one is this. It's been circulating online. We're all in the same storm, but we're not all in the same boat. And I actually think that's more accurate, right? We're all in the same storm, but we're really not all in the same boat. Everybody's circumstances are slightly different. And so now, in our society, we have rioting and destruction going on, although it's tapered a little bit. all being masked as a protest for racial equality. So we have that now to add stress to our lives and this major disruption of our society. How do we deal with what's going on in the world around us? You know, we can't live our lives worrying about something we have no control over. And that's really the challenge in a lot of this, because most of this we have zero control over. So how do we get on with our life? How do we live a life in a nation that's maybe on the brink of anarchy? Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think people would be saying, hey, here's the answer. Let's do away with the police department. I'm like, I am not moving there. Like, I'm sorry, but... And I mean, that would even be a reasonable conversation to have. It's crazy the times we live in. But what does Scripture tell us about the times that we live in? What does it tell us about living our lives in times of tragedy and uncertainty? You know, we can go to many scriptures, and we've been doing this on Friday nights, you know, to find encouragement, words of, you know, positive thinking through all of this. But the Bible is full of scriptures that record the history of God's people enduring times of great trouble and stress and disruptions in their lives. And so we take those stories, we try to glean from them, and then we apply them in our present day to the best that we can. But what can we do when our world turns upside down? That's what I want to talk about today. What can we do when our world turns upside down? You know, when this recent crisis began, many people immediately were wondering if this is the beginning of the signs of the end time events. Join me in Daniel chapter 12. I think many went there right away. It's a natural place to go when the world seems to be coming unglued. Daniel chapter 12. Here in Daniel 12, God revealed to Daniel several major events that would take place at the time of the end, as it's stated. In Daniel chapter 12, beginning of verse 1, at that time, speaking of the time of the end, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. Even to that time, and at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. That's why I've been emphasizing each week that the goal for us is to be written in the book, because that's salvation. That's how we're saved from all of these issues going on, is that our name is written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, verse 4, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. And so here we see in Daniel 12, the time here described as a time of the end is a time of trouble such as never was. And yet I just shared with you a few things that our nation has gone through, some that I've gone through in my life. We've had pandemics before. We've had epidemics before. We've had health outbreaks. We've had rioting. And so this recent thing, when you look at it, I don't think would fall into the category such as never was, because we've gone through these things before. Now, some of them may have been, you know, before we were old enough to remember them, but our nation has gone through them. But we have this prophecy on one hand, and then on the other hand, we have 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 12, 1 Peter 4 and verse 12, which says, Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. And so on the one hand, we have prophesied end time events, and on the other hand, we have this admonition to not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing has happened to you. The challenge for us then is, how do we reconcile these two? Right? To be paying attention to end time events, but to not be overly troubled as we go through various trials. The challenge is not unique to us. Join me in Matthew chapter 8. This challenge, again, is not unique to us at this time, during this period of time in history. It's the same challenge that people have faced throughout history. Jesus' disciples would face similar challenges. Matthew chapter 8. You and I know that it's in the conclusion of John's Gospel, the last verse talks about the Bible can't even contain all that Christ did. Right? There would not be enough books to contain it all. So what we have in front of us is just a glimpse, just maybe the highlights, the most relevant things that were able to be written down. But here in Matthew 8, we've looked at Matthew 8 before. I think I've shared back then that Barclays describes Matthew chapter 8 as a chapter of miracles, because if you go through the entire chapter, there's actually like six healings and one miracle defined. We have a healing of the leper, the healing of the centurion's servant. We have the healing of Peter's mother-in-law, the healing of the sick who were brought to the doors at the evening time. Then we have a miracle, and then we have the healing of the Gerasene demonic. But during all these events, these healings, these miraculous events, Jesus' disciples were right at his side for almost all of them. They were eyewitnesses. And I know we sometimes think, well, if I was there and I saw these things, I would never respond like his disciples did. We're deceiving ourselves. I think we all understand that. But they were right by his side. They observed all these amazing things that he did. And we come yet to Matthew chapter 8, verse 23, and this is the one I want to look at. The miracle of Jesus calming the storm. Matthew 8, verse 23. Now when he got into a boat, his disciples followed him, and a sudden and great tempest arose on the sea. I'm reading from the New King James. So the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. Then his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. But he said to them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. So the men marveled, saying, who can this be that even the winds and the sea obey him? I'm going to read Mark's account, if you want to join me in Mark 4, Mark chapter 4. Just notice Mark's account, the same events. Mark chapter 4, we'll begin in verse 35. It says, on the same day when evening had come, he said to them, let us cross over to the other side. And when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. So we had this little flotilla following him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased and there was a great calm. But he said to them, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him? If you notice just above in verse 34, right before this section I read, it says, but without a parable, he did not speak to them. And when they were alone, he explained all things to his disciples. Now, Jesus was very careful to explain everything he did to his disciples. So as they would witness things, I often wonder what those conversations were about, and how long did they took, you know, and did Jesus just explain it and move on, or did they, you know, ask a lot of questions? But it does say that he was careful to explain everything. So from all they witnessed, and all they saw, and all they were reassured by Jesus Christ in the flesh, it says the storm comes along, and they were fearful, and they were afraid, they were faced with this trial, and they panicked. So how about us? That's what I want to talk about today. How do we separate signs of the times from trials of life? How do we handle our own personal storms of life as they come to us? Title of the sermon, you know, when your world turns upside down. When your world turns upside down. Let's review what Jesus himself said in Matthew 24. He himself stated what the signs of the times would be like when the disciples asked him three questions. They asked him, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming? And when shall this world end? These are the questions we still all want to know, right? Because we all kind of want to have a heads up, make sure we have our spiritual life in order, our spiritual house in order. Jesus replies to them with three things here to watch for. We've covered these in depth in prior sermons, so I won't spend a lot of time on them, but let's just touch on them briefly. The first thing that he warns them about, so the first thing what we need to be warned and aware about, is to not be deceived by men. Matthew 24, verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many." And so that is the first thing he warns his disciples, and he warns us to be aware of. You know, and I guess I will just comment here that the only way we're going to know that somebody is attempting to deceive us is we have to know what the Bible says. It's the only way we're going to know what a deception is we have to know what God's Word says. And so again, the first thing he admonishes them is to be really careful. And it isn't just talking about outside the church, but even those who would be inside, who would claim to be part of the church. Because that's really where we tend to let our guard down the most, people that we would trust that wouldn't want to deceive us. So he says, you know, you got to keep your guard up to make sure that there aren't those, even from within, who might deceive. The next thing he goes on to describe are various military and geopolitical environmental conditions that are going to exist prior to Christ's return, Matthew 24, verse 6. You'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Ironically, through all of what we're going through right now, we're not hearing much about wars going on, right? Because we're so focused on what's right in front of us, but there's still wars going on out there, and conflicts of varying degrees. But he says, you will hear of these wars, but he says, don't let these things trouble you. Verse 7, for nation will rise against nation. That word for nation is ethnos. We've looked at that before. That is ethnicity. That's ethnic warring within a nation, right? One ethnicity against another ethnicity. That is one element. He says, in kingdom against kingdom. That's actually a country against a country. So there's two different types of unrest that will be prevalent in these last days. And he goes on to say there'll be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. The word for earthquakes is seismos. Seismos. And it literally means a commotion or a disturbance of air or ground. It could be an earthquake, it could be a hurricane, tornadoes, tsunamis, earthquakes, all of those would fall into that category of seismos. And he says that's a third condition of what we'll have. You know, we'll have nation against nation, or ethnos against ethnos, kingdom against kingdom, and we'll have seismos to deal with as well. So again, we've had a fair amount of these in our time, but I don't think, as we read in Daniel, that they are on a magnitude such as never was. And that's something we always have to keep in mind, you know, such as never was, as recorded in Daniel. You know, some of what we've been going through as a nation, like this pandemic, as I said, we've been through before, but, you know, we've been on even on a much bigger scale. If you look at the study into the Hong Kong flu. It was 2 years long and 4 million people died worldwide. Pretty massive. So this pales in comparison to that, but it's still something that's been a big disruption in our lives. Matthew 24, verse 8 again, he says, and all these are but the beginning of sorrows. He says, this is just the beginning. It's going to get a lot worse. Ain't seen nothing yet. It's a common phrase, right? Ain't seen nothing yet. And so we need to be prepared for things to get worse. Verse 9 says, and then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, they will betray one another, and they will hate one another. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. He says again, you know, again, he's describing a period of time, again, where things will be very difficult. People will turn on one another. Persecution will even come from within. You know, if you want to see how that, you know, can often happen, go back and revisit, you know, the Nazi occupation and how there were Jews turning Jews in to try to save their own skin. And it in the end, it didn't work out. But in essence, we see there will even be of the household of God, those that will potentially turn on one another. And so it's something we need to be careful of and mindful of. But he says, it's again, it's, you know, these things haven't yet come upon us. But just think about what we've just gone through. You know, go back and think about what you were doing on March 12th. March 12th was a Thursday. I remember because I got a call from Mr. Kubik, and he was supposed to come up that weekend. If you remember, ABC Choir was coming here on March 14th, right? We were all set for that. And he's like, we're trying to decide what to do, and you know, we're thinking we'll cancel services for a couple weeks. And we're like, yeah, you know, probably makes sense because we really don't know about this. And what's a couple weeks? And of course, we were, you know, the prom was the following week, so we were struggling with that. But March 12th, I had no clue I'd be staring at a camera for 12 weeks, right? None of us had a clue on March 12th what we would be going through for the next 12, 13 weeks. How quickly the world changed. How quickly life became disrupted. It was a phone call. I remember thinking, okay, but boom, 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 all of a sudden it all changed. Don't ever forget that. Just that's what we need to take away from this, how quickly everything can change. Otherwise, we think, oh, the Lord delays his coming. Oh, really? Watch how quickly I can change everything. So we need to learn and retain that. If there's one lesson we learn through all of this, is how rapidly things can change. Verse 13. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. The instruction for us is to endure to the end no matter what. No matter what. No matter how quickly things change, no matter how much your world is turned upside down, your life is disrupted, we have to endure to the very end. Because the same shall be saved, he said. And that's what we have to remember. Let's now return to Matthew chapter 8. Let's look at these events one more time. Matthew chapter 8. Let's see what we can draw out of this a parallel, if you will, to our lives. Matthew chapter 8, the Sea of Galilee, for those that are curious, is a freshwater lake. It's about 13 miles long and about 5 miles wide. It's only about 140 feet deep, not much deeper than that. And we know from what we read in Mark's account that they entered the boat, Jesus went to the back of the boat, laid his head on a pillow, and went to sleep. So he was clearly not concerned, because he was deciding to take a nap and we're going to head across to this sea. Matthew 8, verse 23, it says they got into a boat, his disciples followed him. And suddenly a great tempest arose in the sea so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. You know, a takeaway for us, if we want to parallel this, is how quickly a storm can come upon us. Just how quickly a storm in your life can come upon you. Again, think about what you're doing on March 12th or March 13th, and then all of a sudden we're canceling services for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks turned into several months. So we see here, you know, again, we... As I mentioned in the opening of the message, you and I get up every morning expecting each day to be similar to the day before. We may have different things on our agenda, different, you know, plans, whether it's things you have to do at work or things you have to accomplish. But the day is, I expect to get up, I go through my morning routine, I leave the house, I go to the office, I do this, whatever it is, that we expected to be pretty similar. And all of a sudden, it all changed pretty quickly. So again, we have our morning routines that we go through, but the lesson here is how quickly a storm can come upon us. And I think for most of us, I certainly speak for myself, you know, this was one that came out of nowhere for me. I had no clue. I even remember I gave a sermon in like January, kind of joking about the fact that I hadn't been feeling well. And I gave a sermon about, you know, what makes God sick. You may remember that title. And I just, my intro was paralleling the fact that I hadn't been feeling well that week. And I kind of laughed about, oh, you know, of course you start worrying it's COVID, right? That was in January or February, and I was didn't know it was going to be this crazy. But so it is. So again, just thinking about how quickly storms can come upon us. Our routine is disrupted. Our life changes like that. And everything is, and then we're frustrated because everything's a disruption. We want things to go back to normal. You know, you can't go to the store, or you go to the store. You know, there's all these rules. So again, everything just suddenly changes. And that change gets us anxious and frustrated and somewhat agitated. The word that Matthew used that's translated storm here in Matthew 24 is seismos. It's the same word that Jesus Christ used when he said, in the latter days, there will be seismos. And the word for suddenly here can be translated literally, lo and behold. Lo and behold. So we have here in Matthew 24 is, lo and behold, a storm. You know, just a storm. And I think there's times in life when we all go through that. Everything's humming along just fine, and then, lo and behold, a storm hits us. Out of nowhere. It's unexpected. You know, Matthew's phrase here, lo and behold, a storm, seems to suggest that the disciples were shocked at the idea a storm would come upon them. I mean, we have Jesus Christ in the boat with us. Like, why would we end up in a storm? And so they seemed shocked that the storm would come upon them. Think about that parallel in our lives. You know, even when we're close to God, doesn't mean we won't have a storm. They had Jesus Christ in the boat with them, and they still had a storm. So why would we think, so on the one hand, we never want to assume that somebody's going through a trial or a storm in life because they're not close to God. Because here we see, you can be close to God, really close. He could be in a boat with you. You still may end up in a storm because that's his choosing. That's his desire. So here again, we see that, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not being close to God or that we wouldn't. So we have to accept the fact that even in our own lives, even in our closest moments with God and our relationship with Jesus Christ and the Father, we too can find ourselves in, lo and behold, a storm comes upon us. For whatever reason, God is allowing it to happen in our lives. But we just have to accept that it happens. So again, they seemed shocked that it would happen. Are we shocked? Are we shocked, dismayed, disappointed, pick whatever adjective you want, when a storm comes upon us? We don't like storms, we know that. But does it rattle us to the point of, you know, how can this be happening? I'm close to God. I'm doing all the things we've talked about forever, prayer, study, and fasting, meditation. I'm doing all that. Well, here we see again that that's, God has a reason why he puts us through storms. So again, we can't ever, we don't want to respond like them and become kind of lost and dismayed and wonder what's happening. So again, this lo and behold a storm, you know, think about it for a moment. Some of the disciples were fishermen. Just think about it logically. They were fishermen. They probably were in a few storms in their life, right? I'm sure they were out on the water a few times and there a few storms came up. But this one rattled them. So it was a pretty intense storm. But storms were something I'm certain they were used to. Growing up in Michigan, I knew some people in church that were avid fishermen. They go out on Lake St. Clair. Lake St. Clair is one of those great lakes that that's been known as Lake Superior to have sudden pop-up storms that can be pretty devastating. And so I remember one time being with a guy, and like, it was a beautiful day out, and he's like, yeah, no, we're not going. I'm like, he's just like feeling the air or something. He goes, yeah, it's not a good day to be on the water. Okay, whatever. Sure enough, about 2 hours later, a big storm had popped up out in the lake, and people that were out there were rushing, and you know, and then the Coast Guard is sent out to rescue people. Some of the disciples were fishermen. They knew the water. They knew storms, and yet this storm rattled them. To the point where, as we read, they were pretty afraid. Matthew 8, verse 25. The disciples came to him and woke up saying, Lord, save us. We're dying. We're perishing is the word they use. They were afraid for their lives. And again, depending as you study into this, this was a storm. Water was filling the boat. So they were definitely afraid. They said, we're going to die. Yet, as we read, Jesus was asleep. Through this same storm that had them fearful, he was asleep. Now, I would assume, since some were fishermen, they probably had already tried everything they could think of. You know, turn the boat, redirect it, avoid the storm. I mean, anything a fisherman would try to do, I pretty much figure they probably tried. I would think the disciples that weren't fishermen probably deferred to the fishermen. Okay, you get us out of this one. But when all that failed, they woke up Jesus Christ, and they said, we're afraid for our lives. And yet, he was sleeping. If we read Mark's account, let's go back to Mark 4. Notice the way it was written in Mark's account, because of course it seems odd to us that Jesus would be asleep. They woke him up. He expresses a sort of perplexed nature at their lack of faith and rebukes, as it said, the wind and the sea. In Mark 4, verse 39, here we see Jesus speaks three words in our English Bible, like in the New King James. He arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." These are actually two Greek words, right? The two Greek words are translated three English words. He says, "Peace and be still." The Greek word for peace can literally mean hush or silence. To hush or silence. And the Greek word for be still can be translated to muzzle the mouth of a beast. That was the word he used, to muzzle the mouth of a beast. So his first words were intended to silence the roar of the storm. He said, "Silence, hush, quiet it down." And the second one was to calm the turbulence of the storm. Two words that he spoke, the disciples heard. So again, this result, though, terrified them. Because they're like, "Whoa, who is this guy that he speaks two words and it all stops?" If you study into the words here that he used, it implies that the results were instantaneous. That the effect of his two spoken words stopped it immediately. So they were first afraid of the storm, and now they're kind of afraid. Who is this guy that he speaks two words and everything stops? So there's a different use of the word there. It terrified them. Point number one I want to leave with you is we are going to have to face storms in our lives. We are. It doesn't matter how close you are to God. Jesus Christ was in their boat. It doesn't get much closer than that. And yet they had to face a storm. We will face storms as well. So that's the first thing I think we can take away from this. Storms in our life are intended to disrupt our lives. That's what they're supposed to do. You know, what we've just gone through did exactly what it was supposed to do. Shake us up. Disrupt us from our routines. Reassess and reevaluate our routines and decide going forward, what am I going to do differently? And that's why I've kind of tried to not use the word, let's get back to normal. Maybe we'll get back to something better than normal, right? We can get back to our traditions, right? Having our tradition of coming here and fellowshipping before church and having our holy convocation and having fellowship and food afterward. That's ultimately what we want to get back to as our tradition, what we do as our routine on the Sabbath. But hopefully we've learned through this that we want to make that an even better experience. Because as I've said a few times, I think on the webcast that I've done from home, I don't like this sitting at home stuff at all. I miss everybody. As I said, I mean this sincerely. I'm scared of camera. The camera is like 8 feet from me. Actually, it's closer. It violates social distancing. When I went to the GoPro, it had to be closer. But I was looking at a camera week after week after week. And my son Nathan tweaking stuff and getting me nervous because I told him stop tweaking stuff because it makes me think everything is not working. But he's done a great job. You know, between him and I, we've had to learn all this stuff. You know, web OBS studio and blah, 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 and whatever. And then it works this week and then it doesn't work next week. And you know, it's stressful. It's been more stress on me to do that, sitting at home webcasting. You'd think it'd be easier, but it's not, because I got to make sure that all this stuff works. The storms are intended to just shake us up from those routines. So we can assess our routines and say, okay, when we come back together, because we're almost there, what can we do better? Yeah, we have a routine, but can we have a better routine? Can we make that experience even more profitable than what it had been? Because I think we all would agree that our routines, after a while, get boring. It's like driving the same route to and from work all the time. Pretty soon, it's like, I know sometimes, like when I drive here, I'll go different ways just because I like trying different routes. But even those things can become routine. But that is the purpose for a storm. We are, number one, going to face storms in our life. And the purpose is to disrupt us, from our routines, so that we will assess them and analyze them. As I said, in the beginning of March, no one had any idea we'd all be sitting home for several months. Nobody did. Think about it, suggested, hey, I've got an idea. How about for the next 2 or 3 months, we all just stay home, I'll take the camera home, and I'll webcast. Think you'd think, he's crazy. Somebody would be on the phone to the home office like, yeah, this guy's lost it. He's gone. None of us would have wanted that. And none of us would have, raised our hand and say, yeah, I think that's a great idea. But that's what we were thrust into. And we all made the best of it. We did the best we could. And I think, we're coming out of this now appreciating, as I've said repeatedly, the value of having a congregation. Regardless of whatever. We always use the analogy of our congregation as being like family, right? So, yeah, and every family's got the crazy uncle. So what? It's family, right? But I think not being together has made us appreciate being together. So that when we are together, it's a better experience. It doesn't go back to normal. It goes back to better than normal. And we come back just appreciating. As I was watching people come in today, the group that we have here, everybody's like, hey, it's good to see you. I haven't seen you in forever. It's been wonderful to actually see people again. And I know it's been something I've mentioned last week in Mansfield. I used the analogy, giddy like a kid with candy, because I got to see people. It's the first time I'd been in a congregation in weeks, and it was lovely. And it was a wonderful experience. I feel the same way here today. So again, storms are intended to come out of nowhere, shake us up, and make us pause and reassess. Storms come to us in many ways. It could be a car accident. Maybe you're in. Or maybe it's you lose a loved one because they were in a car accident. Or maybe, as I said, it's that phone call in the middle of the night. The phone's ringing, you're already nervous. And then when you answer the phone, the person says something like, are you sitting down? Well, you know where that's going. Or, I'm sorry to say, and you already know where this conversation is going. That's a storm. Lo and behold, a storm. And if you've ever gone through that, your life completely changes. Maybe you went to bed and now you're thinking about what you're going to do at work the next day, and that phone call comes in, and suddenly you're not even really thinking about work the next day. You have to kind of regroup yourself and get, okay, where am I? What day is it? What's on my calendar? What do I have to juggle and change? It's a storm. And it came in the form of a phone call, 2 in the morning. And it disrupts our lives. Or maybe you get lab results. Go, routine exam, you get a physical, and, check this out. They send stuff off the lab, and they call you up and say, yeah, you need to come in. And you're like, what? And then you go in and they say, yeah, it's more than I actually thought. It's a storm. It's a storm that comes out of nowhere. And it causes you to reassess, reprioritize, reevaluate your life. God sends us those storms to wake us up and to shake us up. That time, your life is like the disciples. You're afraid, you're scared, you're reaching out to God. I am perishing. I need your help. Our storms can come from our own mistakes. Sometimes they're sin, and we have consequences for them. They can come simply from poor choices we make. We make bad decisions that aren't sin, but they're just a bad decision. And there's consequences for those as well. They can come as a result of somebody else's mistake. They ran the red light, not you. But lo and behold, storm. They hit you and you're in this terrible car accident. James chapter 1. James wrote about the purpose for trials and storms that come into our lives. James chapter 1, beginning verse 2. Notice here, my brethren, verse 2, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Fall into. Peripipto is the word, peripipto. It means to fall into something that's all around us. Zodiety's word study says to fall into the midst of something so as to be totally surrounded by it. Lo and behold, a storm. And the waves are filling a boat. That's what James is writing about here. You fall into various trials. That word, various trials, the King James Version is diverse temptations. That word is perasmos. It's a trial or testing directed towards the end that he who is tested would emerge stronger and purer from the testing. And that's why he says, count it all joy, because the results are going to be worth it. You are, lo and behold, in a storm that surrounds you, and when you get through it, you will be stronger and purer for it. I often remember the words of Jesus Christ said to Peter when he told Peter that he would deny him. I love the words he says. I kind of paraphrase, so don't quote me on this. He said, but when you are restored, the way he says it, you will strengthen your brethren. I mean, he says to Peter, in other words, you're going to get through, you're going to be restored, and you'll be stronger for it. And the same is true with us as we fall into diverse temptations or various trials. We'll come out stronger and purer and better for it. Doesn't mean we're not maybe afraid, as the disciples were afraid in the boat. So then when we understand why we fall into these storms of life, we should be asking ourselves then, if God was to prevent every storm in my life, would I be better off? The answer is no. Because he says it makes us purer and better and stronger for it. So we really wouldn't be happy, because the end result of who we would become wouldn't be as good as if we had gone through trials of life, the storms of life. They are for our good. And so we should, even though it's difficult, appreciate why God is allowing us to go through storms. And your storm will be different from my storm. This is kind of a storm, as I said earlier, we're all going through, but we're all kind of in different boats. Our circumstances are very different. It's harder on some people than it is others, but it's still something that we're all going through. This current storm, if you will, that we're going through, this COVID-19 pandemic, self-isolation, social distancing, as I guess that's probably going to be the word of the year. I don't know. It's one that we've heard a lot of. Ask yourself, what have you learned as a result of this storm? What have you learned? Think about it now while we're coming out of it. What have you learned through all of this? What effect has it had on your life? What changes have you made in your own life as a result of this? As I've been emphasizing in messages, I'm looking forward with, not only want to say just optimism, but certainly optimism is part of it, but a sense of conviction that we'll be better. As a congregation, we're going to be better as a result of all this. We're going to love each other more. We're going to appreciate each other more, because we haven't been around each other. And so we will appreciate it. And as I said early on, if there's one takeaway we can get from this, let's never forget our brethren who are so scattered that they can't have a congregation to meet with, because they're still out there. We do have scattered brethren who, they get together at a holy day in the Feast of Tabernacles. It's foreign to us because we have what we have. So let's never forget them. We've got a taste of it, but not quite the same taste, because we've kind of known there's an end in sight. But that's something hopefully that we can think about and pray about. So again, what have you learned? And do you honestly believe that you would have learned what you learned unless, lo and behold, a storm came out of nowhere, thrust upon you, and we all scrambled to figure out what to do? I don't think we'd have learned the same lessons that we've learned. And so I think we can appreciate what God is doing. Point number two, I alluded to this a moment ago. Point number two, storms in our lives does not mean God is not with you. It does not mean that God is not with you. The disciples, as I said, had Jesus Christ in their boat. It doesn't get much closer than that. And yet, Jesus Christ was sleeping. Do you think that when they all piled in the boat, they assumed that this is going to be just a hop, skip, and jump just across the Sea of Galilee and get to the other side? I don't think any of them presumed they'd have any difficulty. I mean, look who's in the boat with them. The same person who performed all these miracles, did all these wonderful things, described them all to them, as we read in Mark 4:34. They knew who they had in the boat with them. So I'm sure as they got in the boat, it never crossed their mind that there'd be any problem. And yet, lo and behold, there was a storm. And so maybe that's why the storm was a shock to them. because they had zero expectation. The same can be true in our own lives as we do our part, stay close to God. Maybe that's why sometimes storms disrupt us so much, is because we're thinking, wait a minute, I'm doing everything the right way. Why am I going through this storm? Well, we just saw what happened here in Matthew 8 and Mark 4. They went through a storm as well. And so my point is, don't ever think that God is not with you because you're going through a storm. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 13. Again, like the disciples, why would we think we wouldn't have storms in our lives? None of us like them. I mean, we could say that forever. None of us enjoy going through them. We're grateful and appreciative when they're over. Hebrews chapter 13. Now, why would we doubt that God is with us or not? We sometimes feel that way when we're going through various trials. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? You know, we can read these over and over, but in the midst of a storm, we sometimes doubt, is God with me? But he just said he's never going to leave you nor forsake you. And so if we're doing our part, then he is with us. In the boat, in the storm, with us. As Jesus Christ was with the disciples in the boat, in the storm. He wasn't an outsider saying, oh yeah, you guys go through that storm, I'm going to shout encouraging words to you. He was in it with them. And God will be with us in our storms of life with us if we're close to him. He's not going to leave us. He's not going to forsake us. But it also doesn't say he's going to take the storm away either. Not necessarily. So there's things that we have to learn. So again, God will never leave us. He will never forsake us. This leads me then to my third point. Point number three, storms teach us to let faith triumph over fear. Let faith triumph over fear. And that's something we all struggle to balance. What do people fear more than anything else in life? Death. Matthew chapter 8, verse 26, we see that with the disciples. That is most people's number one fear. And that's why people do everything they can to hang on to life, because most people, they don't know what's beyond. Matthew 8, verse 26. Again, let's read what the disciples said. Why are you fearful, O you of little faith? And he arose and rebuked the winds and sea, and there was great calm. You know, we see here the disciples feared for their lives. They literally feared for their lives. In Mark's account, if you want to go back there, Mark 4:38, I read over it kind of quickly, but I did that deliberately. I didn't want to draw attention to it at that point, but we'll look at it now. Mark 4:38. Notice how Mark records what was stated. It's got a slightly different emphasis to it. The wording hints of a judgment, if you will, or a rebuke directed at Jesus Christ. Mark 4, verse 38. He was in the stern asleep on a pillow. They awoke him and said, Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? I mean, that's a bit of an accusation there. They're you know, Jesus, do you not care? I mean, do you not care that we're dying here? You know, my human nature goes, I'm thinking if I'm him, I'm like, oh, really? You're going to talk to me that way? But he doesn't say that, right? That's just me reading into it. But it's kind of a strong accusation to make against Jesus Christ to assume that he didn't care about them because they feared that they were perishing. Again, it was their perception of the circumstances. Do you not care that we are perishing? And then, of course, after he calms the storm, it says in verse 39, notice this contrast between faith and fear in verse 40. He said to them, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? You know, we see here that the disciples had fear instead of faith. Jesus Christ is suggesting to them that one will displace the other. To be full of fear means you have no faith. To be full of faith means absolutely no fear. All of us are somewhere in between, right? None of us are absolutely one extreme or the other. The lesson for us, though, is to let faith overcome or triumph our fears. Right? As I've often said through a lot of this, I'm probably more of the crazy guy that would just storm the building and say, forget all this and let's keep having services. And I'm not saying that was the right approach. That's just my thinking, right? You could say, oh, that's just 100% faith, or I'm an idiot, right? It's one or the other, right? So just being honest with you, right? The challenge for all of us is finding that balance, right, of prudence and having, my faith was never wavered. I also wasn't fearful, but, you know, Jesus said, look, you gotta find balance in that. Let faith triumph your fear, but just being prudent and careful isn't fearful. Right? So just being cautious and being prudent in how we move forward is not fear. But they were fearful. And so the admonition to us is to let our faith overcome our fears. And just understand what is a fear versus prudence and caution and those type of things. Notice Hebrews chapter 11. We were just over in Hebrews. Should have told you to stay there. Hebrews 11. In Hebrews 11, it mentions all the storms that were faced by those that went before us. They had, all these individuals had to have great faith in order to face, the fear of death. Notice some of what was written here. We'll just read a few examples. We won't read all of it. Hebrews 11, verse 32. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who, through faith, they subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions. They quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they may obtain a better resurrection. Still others, verse 36, had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. Verse 37, they were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world is not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God, verse 40, having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. All of those with great faith who endured all those things we just read, sawn in two, that's the one that always, that one, are waiting in the grave, having not yet received the promise. And why are they waiting? God's still working with us, right? That's what we read. Providing something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. He's not done yet. And so they're going to receive the promise, but they're waiting until God is done with those whom he's still working with here on earth right now. They're waiting for our perfecting to be completed. They're waiting for us to go through our storms and have our faith tested and be found worthy. So why would we expect our perfecting to require any less faith than that? I'm hoping, I'm praying. I don't want to face being sawn in two, but why would we expect it to be any less than that? Maybe I should say, anything less than that, we should be grateful and thankful. I'm not facing the mouths of lions or being sawn in two or all those type of things, so we should be grateful. We'll have our own perfecting that'll have to take place. You know, we read a moment ago in James 1 about trials are for the testing of our faith. Testing of our faith. You know, it's kind of like that, I use a seesaw analogy, right? Faith on the one hand, right, and those trials and things we fear on the other, and just finding that balance in those things. And through every single storm we face, our faith is stronger because God sees us through it. And he's in there with us as we see the example of the disciples with Jesus Christ in a boat in the Sea of Galilee. He doesn't leave us. He doesn't forsake us. He's with us through that storm. And so then as we begin to wind up, then some principles we can apply during storms in our lives. Number one, Pray often. We say this all the time. Pray often. Call upon God to help you through the storm. And maybe more importantly, thank Him when the storm has passed. Thank Him when the storm has passed. How often do we just, we're thankful that the storm has passed, but then we fail to express that to God. Notice the 107th Psalm. Psalm 107. Verse 21. Begin at verse 21. 107th Psalm, verse 21. Those who go down to this, that's verse 23. Yeah, verse 21. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for His goodness and for His wonderful works to the children of men. Let them sacrifice the sacrifices of thanksgiving and declare His works with rejoicing. Those who go down to the sea in ships, who do business on great waters, they see the works of the Lord and His wonders in the deep, for He commands and raises the stormy wind, which lifts up the waves of the sea. They mount up to the heavens, they go down again to the depths. Their soul melts because of trouble. They reel to and fro and stagger like a drunken man and are at their wits' end. Then they cry out to the Lord in their trouble, and He brings them out of their distresses. He calms the storm so that its waves are still. Then they are glad because they are quiet, and so He guides them to their desired haven. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for His goodness and for His wonderful works to the children of men. You know, in those few short verses, we see that we always cry out to God in the midst of our storms, but do we thank Him when the storm is over for delivering us through to the other side and being grateful to Him for the lessons we've learned and His protection through the storm? Philippians 4, verse 6. Philippians 4, verse 6. Philippians chapter 4, verse 6 says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." You know, again, it's convenient for us often to look at this verse 6 and think that it simply says to let our requests be known to God, and we do that in prayer. But read it again. It says, "Let our requests be known." Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. That with thanksgiving is right in the middle of that. That we should never forget to thank God when we're in the midst of a storm and when He sees us through a storm. Because we often just move on and we forget to thank Him. And number two, look to God for shelter and protection. Look to God for shelter and protection. Psalm 91. We have read this during our Friday evening scripture readings. It's been, I think it was one that was sent in right away in the first couple weeks. I'm going to read this Psalm 91 from the New Living Translation. You can follow along in the New King James, but we're going to read this from the New Living Translation. Psalm 91, beginning in verse 1. "Those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. This I declare about the Lord. He alone is my refuge, my place of safety. He is my God, and I trust Him. For He will rescue you from every trap, protect you from deadly disease. He will cover you with His feathers. He will shelter you with His wings. His faithful promises are your armor," that's your large shield, "and your protection," or buckler, a small shield. "Do not be afraid of the terrors of the night, nor the arrow that flies in the day. Do not dread the disease that stalks in darkness, or the disaster that strikes at midday. Though 1,000 fall at your side, though 10,000 are dying around you, these evils will not touch you. Just open your eyes and see how the wicked are punished. If you make the Lord your refuge, if you make the Most High your shelter, no evil will conquer you, no plague will come near your home, for He will order His angels to protect you wherever you go. They will hold you up with their hands so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone. You will trample upon lions and cobras. You will crush fierce lions and serpents under your feet." Verse 14, Lord says, "I will rescue those who love me. I will protect those who trust in my name. When they call on me, I will answer. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue and honor them. I will reward them with a long life and give them my salvation. Finally, then, the third principle I want to point out, I've been mentioning this pretty much every Friday evening, is all of these promises are for those who are submitting to God, who love God and keep His commandments. 2 Corinthians 4. Because we can take great comfort in all of these verses we've been reading if we are doing our part in staying close to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us. We are hard pressed on every side, verse 8, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carried about in the body, the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. For we who live are always delivered to death for Jesus' sake, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh. Verse 12, so then death is working in us, but life in you. And since we have the same spirit of faith, according to what is written, I believed and therefore I spoke, we also believe and therefore speak, knowing that he who raised up the Lord Jesus will also raise us up with Jesus and will present us with you. For all things are for your sakes, that grace, having spread through the many, may cause thanksgiving to abound to the glory of God. Therefore, verse 16, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing. Remember, that was the word that the disciples used. We are perishing. Yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. For we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporary. The things which are not seen are eternal. Brethren, we never were promised that things would get easier after God called us or after conversion. In fact, you can study into that point alone and realize he almost makes a pretty clear statement that it's going to get harder, that you will have trials and tests and, lo and behold, storms, those sudden things that come out of nowhere to disrupt us from our routines. There will be times when we will have these storms. They are intended to turn our world upside down, so that we would begin to analyze and assess our own lives to consider maybe things that we can change. When those things happen in our lives and our routine is disrupted and our world is turned upside down, we want to remember the words of Peter in 1 Peter 4, to not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, as though some strange thing has happened to us. We should rather expect them and anticipate them and know that God is with us. Jesus Christ was in the boat with the disciples. God will not leave you nor forsake you. And we need to take and be assured of that. No, without a doubt, as you read in Hebrews, we're just a long line of God's people who are enduring various trials for the purpose of learning that faith will triumph over fear in our life.